The markets. We just can't get enough of them.
Markets are the drivers of your wealth and investment strategy.
Welcome to Magic Markets with your co-hosts, the Finance Ghost and Mohammed Nallah.
Together, we have more than 25 years of combined experience in the markets.
For those looking to take their market and business knowledge to the next level, we offer Magic Markets Premium, a research report and podcast library that nearly has 100 reports in it and a new one every week, all available for just 99 Rand a month. Recent reports have included the likes of Kroger, Deere & Co., Foot Locker, McDonald's, UPS, Apple, Meta, Johnson & Johnson and Swatch. With broad variety and deep research, this is perfect for anyone looking to go to the next level. We invite you to join us in Magic Markets Premium. Go to magic-markets.com to subscribe. Welcome to episode 165 of Magic Markets. I won't lie, I've had a start to my week that makes me want to buy the products of both companies that we are starting or that we are covering this week, Mo. They are not healthy. They, in fact, are not healthy at all. And sadly, they sometimes feature together when you see sort of specials for takeout or, you know, specials on one of these delivery aggregators. And then you've got to know you are playing serious games with your health. So I took Domino's Pizza, which you can't even get in South Africa anymore because it fell like the Domino's it's named after. And you took a very cool drinks brand.
Yeah, Ghost, very cool indeed. It's Monster Beverage. I mean, the company is famous because, you know, they put their logo on a bunch of Formula One helmets. And again, I think have taken the fight to Red Bull, even if not on the Formula One Championship, certainly from a branding and a drinks perspective, maybe where it matters for shareholders. Interestingly enough, you know, I dislike Domino's Pizza. I'm not surprised they didn't do well in South Africa. I've tried them again up here, and the wife has decidedly said no to Domino's. Monster, I'm not really an energy drink kind of person, and I must tell you, the time I tried it, not really my cup of tea, and that's because it's not a cup of tea. It's a highly caffeinated, and I might add now increasingly an alcoholic beverage range as well. But I'll get into that, Ghost. Why don't you jump into Domino's Pizza? Because we generally have pizza first and energy drinks later, right?
Yes. Look, I will say this before you do Monsters. A sugar-free Monster is like my 3 or 4 times a year. It's like my festival drink. If I'm just wildly, shall we say, under the weather due to the previous night's festivities. I do find that works quite well, a couple of times a year. Not something you should make a regular habit of if you look down the ingredients list. Same being true for Domino's Pizza, of course. So I've actually just recently finished watching Bad Vegan on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen it. It's quite fun. It's about a vegan fugitive. It's quite amazing. You should watch it. Anyway, but the reason they eventually got caught, and to be fair, it's a long story. We won't go into it here, but Domino's Pizza was ordered on a credit card, and that's how they were found. So in the defense of the vegan in question, she actually allegedly didn't eat any of the pizza, but it is mildly funny that she eventually went to jail because someone ordered a Domino's pizza. So there's a useless fact to kick off this show. And a much less useless fact is that the share price is up 42% in the past year. So you wouldn't have gone to jail if you'd ordered Domino's in your share portfolio. You'd be very happy. The pizza is both delicious for some people, maybe, and profitable for everyone. Now, the thing is on a price earnings multiple of over 30 times. So it is a lot cheaper to go and buy the pizza than it is to buy the company. And this is another example of a quick service restaurant trading at a very high multiple. Now, if we look at the EBITDA multiple of 23.8 instead, it is still way higher than Yum Brands, that's KFC, just under 20x, or Restaurant Brands International, which I think is Burger King, that's at 17x. Now, one of the reasons why I think that these quick service restaurants have proven to be resilient in a higher interest rate environment is the barbell strategy. So this means having menu items that are both very cheap and significantly more expensive as well. Just think about it. When last you went to one of these restaurants, you know, I was at Burger King just the other day. You can spend actually quite a bit, or you can get something really affordable. The value meal at your local chain actually manages to be much cheaper, and I mean much cheaper, than any convenience meal at your local grocery store, isn't it? So when you need to feed the kids and the family is itching for a calorific treat on a Friday night, it is vastly cheaper to go and buy the family value pack than to actually go to the grocery store and get something convenience-y from there. Now, it's quite obvious which one is the healthier option, although not always, actually, to be honest, if you look at some of that grocery store food. But families under financial pressure are not always in the position where they have the luxury of prioritizing their health. In fact, often they are not. Now you add in the further convenience factor of ordering for delivery direct from the store on a loyalty app or adding it to your basket on one of the aggregator platforms like Uber Eats, and you really do have a recipe for success. I think we also can't ignore how well these businesses fit into a world of generally dual income households these days and just endless pressure on our time. I am convinced, absolutely convinced, my parents were not this busy when they were in their 30s. I mean, maybe they'll deny it, but I'm convinced of it. I think this always on world is very intense. And these sort of convenience food offerings fit very well in that. There is often just no energy left in the household for someone to actually cook. A few clicks later, and Domino's or whatever else you like has arrived at your door, either on a scooter or on a bicycle overseas. So long story short, these quick service restaurants trade at high multiples. The market generally likes them. And there are good reasons to believe that they will continue to not just find resonance with consumers, but also be quite resilient in an economic downturn.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, Ghost, we've covered a couple of these companies in Magic Markets Premium before. We've covered McDonald's, for example. And again, if you've missed those or if you're not a subscriber, go and check it out. It's only 99 Rand a month for really in-depth, detailed analysis on these global companies. Let me jump into Monster, because you mentioned, you know, this high-pressure world. Heck, if you don't have the energy to cook home meals, I'm going to say go and buy a Monster drink and then go and cook your home meals. And maybe that's Monster over Domino's Pizza. Rewinding a little bit, Ghost. I mean, this is a company that we covered in Magic Markets Premium a very long time ago. You know, it was actually back in November 2021. And again, I think famous for being a stock that has beaten the S&P 500 on a compound annual growth rate since its listing. I'll get into some of the performance numbers as my third talking point. But as my first talking point, I just want to recap, you know, where we were when we covered the stock back in November 2021. At the time, it was trading around $93 a share. And in fact, if you have a look at the share price now, you're going to think, well, geez, that's not a lot of action. But there was actually a 2-for-1 stock split back in March 2003. And so if we were looking at $93 a share back then, you're roughly around $46 there and thereabouts today. So you've actually seen substantial share price growth from the time we've actually covered the stock to today. Now, back then on the technicals, you know, we were somewhat bullish. And I say somewhat bullish because, you know, we literally went out and we said, you know, a retest of the highs is possible. We think that you could see some downside and then a rally materializing. And that's kind of what played out. We saw the stock move all the way down to our support 2 level, which back then was around 70. So if you translate that, call it $35 a share. And then subsequent to that, we actually saw a very strong rally materialize. And again, perhaps one that I didn't watch as closely, but even if I were watching it, I remember looking at this, not really excited around the overall value proposition. There were some competitive pressures we had highlighted. Some of the bear points we had were issues around supply chain. You know, back then, supply chain was a big issue. It did come through in the numbers. And then as it abated, as those kind of eased back, you saw it come through very strongly in terms of the company's performance. Some of the bull points we had highlighted were the brand, the strength of the brand, the growth in volumes. And I think that's where I'll go with my second talking point, because that's where a lot of the excitement has actually come through. A quick look before I move on from that. You know, the price to sales multiple, for example, on the stock had peaked around 9 times. When we had covered it, it was around 7 times. It's close on 7 times right now. It's roughly on the same PE at around 23 times on a forward PE basis. And I want to highlight a key point here. If you look at a trailing PE, it's north of 30. So the differential between that is really the kind of growth that a company like this has consistently put through in terms of the bottom line, in terms of the earnings numbers. The one black spot there has been the fact that their margins have actually declined from the time we had covered it to now. Although if you have a look at the last quarter, there was a quarter on quarter improvement on margins. Let me not take the thunder away from some of my next talking points where I go into the numbers in a lot more detail, Ghost.
Yeah, I'm getting into numbers as well now. So look, you might enjoy having Russians on your pizza, but you can't have your Domino's in Russia anymore. The remaining 143 stores have all been closed. And when Domino's discloses retail sales growth, they now exclude Russia from both the 2022 and 2023 numbers. So in their fourth quarter, global retail sales up by 4.9%, the US up 4.5%, international up 5.2%. The delivery side of their business, 48% of transactions for the year, because these are Q4 numbers, so we also now have full year. So 48% of transactions for the year and 58% of sales revenue. Carry out, 52% of transactions, 42% of sales. Now, what that tells you is that the average delivery spend is higher than the average carry out spend. Perhaps we just spend more and we're actually literally sitting on our couch ordering off our phone. You know, it's not impossible. Of course, there's also a real saving on the travel cost, but I think it's just the friction of literally getting off the couch, getting into your car. If you can save that, I think you'll have a higher propensity to spend. I really do. Now, if we dig into the US in more detail, we'll find 92 net new stores. That brings the US store count to 6,854 stores. It's a lot of pizza. And gross margin, yes, it's down 1.6% for the US company-owned stores. But it is quite interesting to note that Domino's believes that the average franchisee made a profit of $163,000 in 2023, up by $23,000 the previous year. That's quite a big increase. Now, the disastrous rollout and subsequent closure in South Africa of Domino's, which I think started out as Scooters, is a good reminder that franchisees are not guaranteed success when it comes to these brands. So it's very, very important that franchisee profits are moving higher, because otherwise there will not be demand to open more restaurants. And all of these businesses depend on franchisees being willing to put their capital behind the name. Now, I suspect something like a KFC in South Africa is as certain as it gets. But South Africans don't seem to have much of a taste for this US-style pizza. And it's not just us. International same-store sales up just 0.1%. There's like no growth there. Pressure in Europe and geopolitical tensions in the Middle East to blame. But then they are very quick to tell investors, well, the Middle East is actually a small part of the group. So in reality, I think economic pressure in Europe coming through there, but also, you know, how popular is Domino's really outside of the US?
Yeah, and I think that's really the core question. I mean, interestingly enough, the first time I tried Domino's pizza was in India, and it was very popular in India. You know, you found a Domino's pizza on pretty much every street corner. I didn't like the pizza, and maybe now a lot more, you know, people out there preferring alternatives. There are lots of alternatives in the fast food space. Let me jump back into Monster, because I said I'm going to get into the numbers. And boy, were they actually strong numbers. Again, another quick story here. I looked at Monster. It looked overdone. It looked overbought. I entered a small short position just before these results were released, because again, I thought, you know, you can't really sustain these massive growth numbers that have come through. And in fact, Monster's own track record over the last four quarters was kind of patchy. You know, they missed in two quarters and they beat in two quarters. So I went in with a short. Unfortunately, on the release of the results, and they were good results, I'll get into that, the stock spiked quite sharply. I was closed out, literally a top tick, right? I had my stop loss in place. The stock top ticked. I was closed out. It's down from the peak levels we had seen just post the release of the earnings, but still a very strong performance. And again, I'm probably going to watch it, but maybe I'm a little gun shy now. Don't know if I'm confident enough to actually go through with another short. And I'll tell you why. So if we have a look at these numbers, I did mention that this was a stock that has outperformed the S&P 500 since inception. But in fact, over the last year, it's been a little disappointing. You know, the stock's up around 15% versus the index that's close on 30%. And we know that tech stocks have a large bearing on the index, but the stock actually underperformed over the last year. But when we have a look at the underlying fundamental performance, well, we saw a 16% sales increase for the three-month period that ended in December. And importantly enough, a 20% increase in the core energy drink portfolio. So, I mean, that is really stellar performance. It's the kind of performance you see in tech companies, not necessarily in a beverage company. Remember, they go up against the likes of Coca-Cola and PepsiCo. And I'll touch on some of those points a little bit later on. So as I indicated, strong growth in the core energy drink portfolio, but then wait for it, a 30% growth in its alcoholic beverage segment. Now, this is a new segment. It's something that was really only coming onto the platform when we covered the stock in 2021. And 30% growth, really strong. The brand there is one called Beast Unleashed. So maybe Ghost, you know, you can actually have Monster before your party and then after your party when you need to recover. Maybe that's the value proposition. What does this mean? It means that profits were actually up 21%. There were some one-time charges that were accounted for and a really sharp jump in the earnings, which I think were quite stellar. If we have a look at overall beverage demand, that's been fairly strong in the Monster stable. And then, as I mentioned, the supply chain pressures actually abated. So they had decreased costs on raw materials and freight. And I think that also contributing to an overall strong number. Now, having a look at, if we zoom out, you know, a lot of innovative product releases still on the cards for the year ahead. Lots of those launches coming through in the alcoholic category. And I think the market's getting quite excited about it. Reversing a little bit, in terms of the last set of numbers, you know, when we look at an earnings per share basis, that came through at around 38 cents per share, very much in line with consensus estimates. So the market had priced in some of this optimism. And so if you have a look at that, meeting the market expectation, But the outlook, I think that's important. The company expecting to grow its earnings by 12.7% in the coming year. So I think that outlook really contributing to some of the upside we had seen. How does that 12.7 compare in terms of the last year? As I had indicated, around 13%, just north of 13% in the previous year. So a slight deceleration, but it's still pretty much around the 13% mark. Now, what do I think about this? I think they're consumer pressures. You do have budget-conscious consumers. And so I think that might take some of the shine off the growth numbers. As I indicated, the last four quarters hasn't been all smooth sailing. They missed in two, but they beat in two. I'm less comfortable with the outlook on Monster. But again, my short didn't work out that well. I'll get into some of the performance of the share price as my last talking point goes.
I mean, Monster's just so interesting, right? I mean, I know it's the one you've covered here, but like, from my perspective, maybe it's easier to talk about some of the alcohol-related stuff for obvious reasons, Mo. And I think they've missed out on that occasion based on how some of the FMCG players speak. You know, it's always been the Red Bull nightclub vibe. You know, Red Bull doesn't make the what goes into a Jager bomb other than the Red Bull itself, but they sell a hell of a lot of Red Bulls thanks to that drink. So it's interesting to see Monster coming through on that side. And on their normal drink, of course, they sell a whole lot of them through the forecourts. So I think, you know, as consumers spend more on petrol, it's certainly been one of my worries. But then again, I would have been short like you and been killed by it. You know, you go to the petrol station, you see the specials at the little shop. Yeah, that's great. But you just got absolutely killed at the pump. You know, you don't necessarily have money now to go and do the chips and Monster special. So it is quite interesting to think about how the consumers behave around this stuff. So I'll jump into my final point now on Domino's. And I guess what I need to deal with now is, why do investors get so excited about this thing if the revenue growth is not exactly much to write home about, and yet the valuation multiple is so huge? Now, if you look over a long enough period, the thing about Domino's, and to be honest, its competitors, is that investors see it as a regular source of cash flow coupled with above inflation growth. So the idea here is these restaurants have a long growth runway. And the reality is that with this barbell pricing strategy, they actually compete with grocery stores as well. So they effectively have quite a low, actually a tiny market share, if you consider the percentage of total spend on food. I know the way my life is at the moment, my food bill is pretty much split between grocery stores and convenience stuff like a smoothie at Kauai instead of cooking something at home. And I think a lot more people are living like that. So these players can keep on rolling out restaurants, innovating the menus to actually respond to consumer pressures and to try and just win a bigger share of wallet here. They can also adapt to local tastes, or at least they can try to. We know Domino's hasn't done that well necessarily. And overall, it gives investors a way to just buy and forget these stocks. So Domino's is expecting to achieve another 7% growth in sales in 2024. It just keeps on ticking on. If you look over 10 years, Domino's share price performance. Do you want to guess the CAGR, Mo? Over 10 years of Domino's.
I don't want to hazard a guess. No idea. Let's cheat you. Give me the number.
Just under 20%. So that means this thing is 469% higher over the past 10 years. That is mega. McDonald's has done 208% over that period. Restaurant Brands International, 112%. Yum, over 10 years, that's like the laggard at 87.5%, which is still not exactly terrible. And by the way, these are all in dollars. So prepare yourself. And Mo, this is something we've talked about that unfortunately we are going to start pointing out to people because it's not nice, but this is why we focus on global stocks. So, you know, bearing in mind you could have done those growths in dollars over the last 10 years, I'm now going to give you Spur and Famous Brands. Would you like to guess the total share price return? So not dividends, total share price return at Spur over 10 years in Rand?
I would say in dollars, I would say flattish, right? So, I mean, I know that's a bit of a cheat, but I would say flat. I mean, the growth has been global growth, global consumer so much stronger, South African consumer pressure. So I'm going on a guess, flat in dollar terms. I don't know what that means in Rand terms.
Flat in dollars would be the dream. In 10 years, Spur is up 1.2% in total. Oh, wonderful. Famous Brands down 41%. So you were definitely better off just going and actually just buying the chicken wings and eating them rather. And that is before we actually adjust for Rand depreciation. So I think this is a classic case where there are far too many investors chasing South African stocks because of their dividend yield without actually lifting their heads to what is going on in terms of global growth. I think if you're willing to take a more active view on what is going on around you, you can definitely make money by picking stocks on the JSE. So recent performance at Spur, perfect example. Spur's doing really well right now. And if you kind of read that through and you took a position on that over, say, the last year, you've actually done very nicely. But if you want to buy and forget, then you need to be looking internationally, and you could pick any one of those other companies internationally. Any of those returns in dollars would pretty much wipe the floor with what you've gotten on the JSE. And you didn't have to be a hero here and pick the winner. That is the case even if you just picked Yum, which has done, what is it, almost 88% in 10 years in dollars, excluding dividends.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that puts it into perspective, Ghost. I mean, I said flat in dollar terms, you're flat in rand terms. And I mean, it's familiarity. I love Spur, right? But that doesn't mean I have to love Spur's stock. I mean, if that was actually flat in rand terms, that's massively down in dollar terms. And now's a good time for me to jump into my third point on Monster, because I look at that share price performance. And I mean, you had indicated how Domino's Pizza had done. So interestingly enough, Monster underperforming Domino's Pizza over the last year. I had indicated how it had actually trailed the S&P 500 around 15%. So if you were to take, let's assume a one-year CAGR of between 13 to 15%, that's more or less in line with the kind of revenue growth the company's actually put through. So that explains why the multiples, if you have a look at some of those multiples, have stayed kind of steady. But I did indicate this was a stock that over its entire kind of listed history outperformed the S&P 500. And that translates into a CAGR of 26% consistently over several years, certainly over a decade. Let's actually show you how that's performed over the last decade. CAGR down at around 18%. So it's showing you how that deceleration comes through. And if I bring that into successively shorter timeframes, 5 years, 16.5%, 3 years, patchy. I mean, they had a little bit of a wobble there, 9.9%. So it's certainly showing you over a very long time period that those days of 26% CAGRs have actually, they're potentially behind us. We're now down in the teens, and that is assuming that the company continues to meet what looks to be fairly optimistic revenue outlook. Now, remember a couple of key points here. This is not a stock that pays a dividend. So your entire return is in the share price growth. Also importantly, it's a stock that has no debt. So I think that de-risks them to a significant degree. But what I did, Ghost, is I went and I had a look at how has Monster performed against its competitors. And here we list the likes of Coca-Cola. I mean, obviously, big competitive pressures with Coca-Cola. We've got PepsiCo in there as well. I've even included some of the alcoholic beverages. So if you look at Anheuser-Busch, or if you have a look at Diageo, and over the last year, even though Monster's underperformed the market, it's outperformed that entire peer group. Most of the peers, the best performance we could get out there as the number two position is a flat performance from Coca-Cola over the last year versus the let's call it mid-teens from Monster Beverage. If we zoom out a little bit and we go over a longer time period, and now if we have a look at 5 years, Monster still outperforming all of its competitors, and I say significantly. So you're up over 80% over that time period versus the next best, which was PepsiCo. And remember, PepsiCo, a company we've covered in Magic Markets Premium, it's more than just beverages. There's snacks in there. PepsiCo up just north of 40% over that time period. And then over the very longer term, and this is not since Monster's listing, it's actually since the listing of all of these players, including Diageo. Again, Monster, the clear winner, and it's by a country mile. It's like almost 5x what the next best player has done. So this has been a fantastic example of a historically, absolutely sublime performance. But you've got to look at what the outlook looks like. And again, whilst I might not be brave enough to enter that short again, I just have a big question mark to say, does this energy drink company have that much energy left in the tank? Certainly, if you ask the market, they seem to think so. I'm maybe a little bit more cautious, a little bit more skeptical, Ghost.
I mean, this is just such a cool sector overall. I think in our premium offering, we've covered McDonald's, we've covered Yum, we've covered Starbucks, you know, at the very least. And I think there's a lot to, yeah, just go and tap into that library and actually learn about. And I've certainly enjoyed learning about these stocks. And obviously, what helps tremendously is it makes it a lot easier to then go and just do a refresher on what's going on at Domino's when we've done the hard yards on some of those companies. So obviously, this is the benefit to our premium subscribers, is you've got a nice deep library there of, well, a hell of a lot of stocks, really, to go and actually learn about. And, you know, it makes it easier to then understand an industry the next time you look at it if you've done at least one deep dive into one of those major sector players before. And we've also covered Monster, to your point. So, you know, really nice to kind of see all of that come through. I suppose if we had to each pick one, gosh, they're both expensive. I don't know if I wouldn't buy either of them, I'll be honest with you. My answer would be no. I just know.
Yeah, look, I think the easy answer for me is I would definitely prefer a global stock over a local stock. I think you've made a very compelling case around that. I think on these two stocks specifically, I'd probably avoid both of them. I mean, heck, if I'm brave enough, I might still consider that short on Monster just because I think it's run so hard. But again, what do you think as our listeners? Hit us up on social media. It's at Magic Markets Pod, one word, at Finance Ghost and at Mohammed Nalla, all on X, or go on to LinkedIn, find us there, pop us a note on there. If you're not a premium subscriber, go and have a look. It's only 99 Rand a month, lots of detail and a library of over 100 global stocks that will help you demystify what global stocks look like and perhaps open your eyes to some of the opportunities that lie beyond the South African market. We hope you've enjoyed this. Until next week, same time, same place. Thanks and cheers.
Cheers. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not financial or investment advice. Please speak to your personal financial advisor.